You're invited to join thousands of Episcopalians, neighbors, and friends this summer at the Love Always Revival at the KFC Yum Center in Louisville, Kentucky. On Saturday, June 22nd, get immersed in inspiring worship and community, deepen your love for God, kick off the 81st General Convention, and extend a warm welcome to folks discovering the Episcopal Church. The revival is free to attend, so bring your friends. If you're from a neighboring diocese, check in with your diocesan revival champion to find out about group travel options. You can find more information along with registration at iam.ec/lovealways.
This is Bishop Michael Curry, and you're listening to The Way of Love. In this episode of The Way of Love podcast, I catch up with the one and only Jen Hatmaker, New York Times best-selling author, host of For the Love podcast, and leader of a tightly knit online community where she reaches millions of people every week. We discuss Jen's newest book, Feed These People, Slam Dunk Recipes for Your Crew, and how meals connect us to life in community. Jen and I also discuss the importance of telling the truth about American history and how we can look out and advocate for folk who are being targeted right now, especially our LGBTQ family members. Oh, Jen, welcome back to The Way of Love. It's so good to talk with you and catch up with you. Oh, you're wonderful. And to see all the things you're doing, my God.
I am so glad to see you. Are one of my favorite people on planet Earth. So have to do is get a little email in my inbox saying, you want to come on Bishop Curry's podcast? I'm like, say the day. What day? What time? All the days. Yes. Thank you for having me back. I'm so happy to see you.
Well, back at you. You are one of my favorite people. And I just love talking with you. And this is exciting. It's been a little while, I guess, at least a year.
Yeah.
At least, what's been going on? What are you doing? And
it's been a lot, right? These last 3 years, I was just having a conversation with a friend and we realized we had just passed the 3-year mark on COVID.
Yep.
And it just feels at once like it's only been 1 minute and also like it's been a million years. I can't pick which way I feel about it. It was fast and slow.
Yeah.
We're still, you know, over here emerging. This year has stabilized, which is lovely.
Yeah.
After 2020, after 2021, I'll take stable and boring for the rest of my life. Like, yes, please give me stable and boring. And so
I'm with you.
I'm down, Bishop. You know, I have 5 kids.
Yeah.
And I am down to just one left. There's one person that lives in this house with me, and it's just the two of us. Neither one of us know what to do. We've been in a big family as long as we can remember. We keep looking at each other going,
oh my God.
Is it dinner? Like, do I cook it? Oh. Do we just go out? What is this life? So she's a junior in high school.
Wow.
Yeah.
All the other little birdies have flown out of the nest.
Yep. The fourth one is a freshman. He went off to college this past fall, and it's a little bit wonderful.
Yeah.
I've been parenting since I was 23. So it's a little bit wonderful and it's a little bit weird. And so I kind of feel two ways about it, but I'm proud of them. It's fun to have young adults. It's fun to watch them fly. It's fun to watch them just become who they are. Yeah. And I had a little hand in that, but it's just them. This is who they are and where they're going. And so it's fun to be kind of on the sidelines a little.
Wow. Well, coming out of the last time we talked might have been at the tail end of the pandemic. I'm not sure. I think we're still in pandemic, but it was the tail end of it. What have you been thinking about since then? What's emerged for you, you know, might help the rest of us? Because we're kind of in the funky land between the pandemic, the height of it is over, but COVID hasn't left the neighborhood.
That's right.
There were residual impacts. I'm not sure we all know what they are yet.
I know. It sometimes seems absurd that that people look to ordinary people for guidance. And I'm like, I'm out here flesh just thrashing around like everybody else. But, you know, I don't know if you remember this, Bishop, but I told you this when you gave the benediction for my podcast in 2021, which is what you were talking about, kind of the closing blessing over the year and prayers for the year to come. And
I remember
I told you then that I had just from the beginning of the pandemic, I'd lost my marriage. I was married for 26 years and married to a pastor. Uh-huh. And so, you know, we had structured our whole life around church and church planting. We have a church still thriving here in Austin. And I didn't see it coming. And so right in the middle of this global pandemic, which of course none of us saw coming, I lost my marriage that summer, that very first summer of 2020. And so I feel like I'm coming out of such a tailspin, and I know I'm not the only one. I have my finger on the pulse of our communities and I'm listening. So many of us suffered in ways both visible and invisible these last couple of years. And the pandemic was hard on a lot of us. It was hard on our marriages. Yep. Some of us lost marriages. A lot of us lost jobs. Yeah. In some cases, our entire industry was rattled and is yet to kind of fully rebound or recover. And so I know for sure that the common story right now is emerging from some pain. Yeah. I think that's just to varying degrees, but pain Olympics. Yeah. Pain is pain. If it's sad and hard in your life, then it is sad and hard. That's it. We're not in competition. Yeah. And so I think for me, and one thing I'm telling my community a lot these days is it has had that awful purifying effect. Man, I hate that this is in the Bible and I wish this wasn't the system. I do. But suffering does have a strange purifying effect on our hearts and our souls. Yeah. It just does. And, you know, I wish we got to these places from joy and laughter. I wish that was the path.
That would
be nice.
But
it turns out, wouldn't that be nice? Why can't that be the system? But I find myself sitting in the seat right now where I'm just saying, ooh, what really matters? And it's pretty pared down. It pared down quite a bit for me. And what do I care about? I'm at the halfway point of my life, more or less. And I'm thinking, all right, how do I want to spend the second half?
Yes.
What do I care about? What gives life? What is full of love? What's full of hope? Where's that? Where's that story?
Yeah.
That's the story that I want to hook into. And to some degree, we can choose it to some degree, despite our circumstances, right? Don't you think?
Yes. Yes. I'm with you on that. We can choose how we internalize and respond.
That's it. That's what we have.
It's work. But we can't control what happens.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
We can control how we respond and how we process it. I've learned a lot about processing these last couple of years in therapy because I had so much trauma from the loss of my marriage and just working my kids through their shock and trauma too. And so I've learned a lot about what it means to let our pain flow through us, to feel it, to face it, to admit it, not to resist it, but just to let it be what it is. And that to me has been a real path of healing. And so my tendency, my instinct is to resist pain. I've been historically not good with hard things. I just prefer the top half of the glass.
Yeah.
That's just how I was born.
Yep.
An eternal optimist. And so I really had to have practitioners help me learn how to live in the bottom half of the glass for a while.
Yeah.
And turns out there's beauty there too. Who knew?
Yeah.
There's beauty there too, ultimately.
Somebody just recently, I can't remember where I was, but it was in a conversation about navigating through dark times. Mm. And this person quoted Howard Thurman, who used to speak of, remember, darkness is always luminous.
Yes.
There's even light at the depth of the sea.
Mm. It's so beautiful.
You can't see it ordinarily. It's not obvious, but it's luminous darkness.
Mm.
That's what you're describing.
It's true. Barbara Brown Taylor talks about that.
Does she really?
Yeah, that's one of her like beautiful metaphors that she uses. It's a gift to us to be able to have leaders lead us through that luminous darkness.
Yeah.
And to realize that even here, we are loved. God is with us. He always was, never wasn't. He is with us down there at the bottom of the ocean. There are beautiful things to discover there that you just cannot perceive in the bright, shiny light of day. You just can't.
Yep.
So I'm on the downhill swing here from all of that loss and feeling grateful, feeling like life is pretty precious and that I don't want to squander it on nonsense. That's where I find myself sitting these days.
Awesome. Awesome. And you know what was wonderful about it? You went to people who could, not like Job's friends, who were not particularly helpful on his journey, but you found some
not
friends,
helpful.
Some folks. Therapists or friends or colleagues who are helpful,
Yeah, that's right.
And your podcast help others. You know what I mean? Those become conversations.
That's right. You know, I just, I can look back over the course of, well, really my whole life, frankly, and just see how many people were just a little bit ahead of me on the path. And they just had the kindness. They had the generosity of spirit to hold up a lantern, right? For those of us who were still behind them. And they held up their lights and said, this was my story. And this is how I got through. This is what I learned. And this is what you can know. This is what I discovered. And this is how I got there. These were my best teachers. These were my best practices. Those lanterns lit my path. And so I feel like now, and it's to some degree, I've always felt this way as a leader, but a big part of my job is to hold up the right lanterns, the ones that I can. I can't hold them all up. I only have a few, but the ones that I have are mine to hold up. And so for me, this has been a season of a lot of transparency in front of my community. I suffered in front of them. I grieved in front of them. I processed in front of them. And I've been healing in front of them and talking about it all along the way. This is what I'm learning. This is what's hard. This is where I keep stumbling. This is a new idea for me. This is some free therapy. I spent $125 on it and I'm going to give it to you right now. You get it for free. Those are my lanterns, and I feel a real sense of responsibility to hold them up well.
Well, and in that way, this is a terrible segue, but in that way, you've been feeding folk. You've been feeding, and that leads me. You've got a recipe book.
Isn't that funny? Isn't that the craziest thing? You know, it's not my genre. I write books for women, you know, generally in the kind of faith and like development space. And so I've always loved to cook forever, just like a regular person does, just a home cook who cooks for all the people who live here. Yeah. And I've been writing recipes online, just helter skelter ad hoc for years.
Oh, have you really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. My community just kept saying to me, would you write us a cookbook, but like this? You know, I write it in my way, Bishop, like sarcastic and melodramatic and long and full of too many words and hyperbole and just the way I do. I wasn't trying to write a cookbook. I was just trying to be silly. And so they said, write us a book the way that you do. And so I actually, I wrote that cookbook during the pandemic, just after I lost my marriage. And I'll tell you, I told my team after I turned it in, I said, look, I don't know if a single person is going to read this cookbook, if they're going to buy it. I have no idea. But if nobody does at all, every second of this project will still have been worth it because it was so nurturing for me. Yeah. I just didn't have any gas in the tank to write a book that required a lot of emotional heavy lifting. I was on fumes.
Right.
You know, I was just in recovery and healing myself. But you know what I could do? I could write about pot roast.
Yeah.
I could go in my kitchen and cook 700 million hours of test recipes, feeding everybody along the way. I would just say to all my best friends, Bishop, live right by me.
Oh, really? They're nearby.
One on my street, two on the street behind me, with 0.02 miles apart from each other. I can't tell you how many times I would send out a text. I'd be like, I have four recipes. They're done. None of them go together. One's a breakfast, one's a dessert, one's a dinner, can you come over and test them? I need honest opinions. And they're like, on our way.
Okay.
So my people were like, write another cookbook.
Oh,
we ate for
God.
A year. I'm like, yes, that's so true. It was so fun.
Oh my God.
It's called Feed These People. And that's just kind of what I do. And that's what most home cooks do. They're just feeding the people they love. And there's just something, you know, the Bible has quite a bit to say about the table and the power of it and what it means to gather around food and feasts and family and friends and faith. I mean, that is the through line. I mean, throughout all of scripture, the world has known for a long time that there's something nurturing and nourishing and powerful and even sacred about gathering around a table with people that you love and breaking bread. And so it's not a new idea.
Yeah.
Very, very, very old idea. And it just, it still has legs.
It still has legs. Yes, it does.
It's still a good practice.
Now this isn't the greatest metaphysical question, nor is it the deepest existential question.
Okay.
What's your favorite recipe? Mm-hmm. If you had to name one. Mm-hmm.
Oh man, listen, I like to pretend that I am sophisticated, that I have a sophisticated palate, that I like food that is elevated, and I do, but I'll tell you, I'm just a Southern girl who kind of grew up down and dirty on food. And my favorite recipe in the book is called Diner Cheeseburger Sliders with Trash Sauce.
Have mercy. It's
just what it sounds like. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's sloppy, goopy, cheeseburgery, greasy, delicious. I could eat it every day of my life. I didn't say I was going to feed you healthy. I said I'm just going to feed you. No. So know what you're getting.
That's right. Sometimes you just want good, whether it's good for you or not. I want something that's good.
That's right. Heck yeah.
I love it. My sense of you is that you really do feed us and feed. And that's part of who you are.
Thank you.
And you have, you know, in your podcast and I'm guessing in other aspects of your ministry, have set a table before us, or the Lord sets a table before us. And you've, you know, kind of like Mary and Martha in the Bible, provided something for us to eat. Yeah, tended it. And that's kind of what you do. And I mean, I was just kind of, I was looking at, went to your web. I hadn't been there in about a year. I hadn't looked to see. I said, my God, all this has happened in a year. I mean, there's more. I mean, the podcast.
Yeah. I got a lot of little slivers of the pie chart. And, you know, my North Star is being faithful, being a faithful leader and toward what is good and right and true. Just under the North Star, just south of it, are women. And so that's what's been put in front of me to serve and to lead well. And so I'm always thinking, how can I get to them? How can I serve them? What do they need?
Yeah.
What are they craving? What are their questions? Where are their pain points? How can we gather? Because one thing I have learned, Bishop Curry, about leading women is if I can just figure out how to get them in the same space, at that point, the sum is greater than its parts, because women have this alchemy with one another where they just create community. You can't stop it. I don't need to organize it. I don't have to pull all the levers. I don't have to put a ton of structure. The women do it because women are authentic generally, and they're craving it from other women. So I've just got all these little silos where I'm like, okay, here are gathering points. You want to come to the podcast? Let's be in the listening community where we're learning from people. You want to be in the book club? Come here. Let's be readers together. And we read beautiful books and books that change our hearts and souls and minds. And we have this incredible community over here. And I have my readers from all the books that I write. And that is a community in itself. And then I have this whole course that we call a me course. It's essentially everything I know. That's what it is, Bishop Curry. It's everything I know. And my team and I went, okay, how can we fit everything into these really condensed a library of sort of practitioner work? So I've got all the Me Course community too. And I just love it. I just love every bit of it because I love women. And I believe in our capacity to recover and build and create and innovate and connect. I can't get enough of it. And so you will always find me just hustling, building little machines wherever I can build them to gather the women together in any which way that I can.
Wow. Well, one of the things you also do is you have I think a Christ-informed or Christ-shaped social vision and commitment that faces race and sex and sexuality and controversy. And I know you've paid some prices for a commitment to love, not as a sentiment, but as a way of living with and for others, as well as the self. And I know that, and folk know that about you. I just came back from our House of Bishops, and we were in Alabama, and hosted by the diocese there, and wonderful, wonderful folk. We had one day when we went to Montgomery for the Institute of Racial Justice to both the museum of which is really sort of slavery to the present, heavy stuff. I mean, it's our story. It's an American story, and it's our story, black and white alike. It's our story. It's everybody's story. And we did that, and then went to the I don't want to call it cemetery, where lynchings are memorialized, the memorial garden, to all of that. And I was just wondering what your thoughts are in terms of where we are racially. I'm going to get the human sexuality in a second, but where are we? I mean, you've had insights about that, and you've been a witness. And I'm just wondering where you think, coming out of the pandemic, I mean, you know, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor. I mean, we've had indigenous boarding schools realizing that, you know, all of that. I mean, Asian Americans being afraid. I mean, the trans community has been afraid. I mean, just something's going on. What are you thinking? What have you been thinking about?
Yeah. And I'm down here in Texas, so we have all the border.
You got the border. Oh my God.
Just abuse.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
And so I was in Montgomery a few years ago with Brian. We spent a couple of days with him, and it was when the museum was just in idea.
Yeah.
And we went to several of those lynching sites and dug that dirt in those jars.
It's like 200 jars now.
It was a powerful talisman, really, as this was soil and dirt. This is not a construct. It isn't, you know, and now, right now, we are, I want to say it's unfathomable, but it really isn't. It's just, it's devastating and scary to now be facing down, you know, this critique of critical race theory in our schools, as if we could just erase it from our very history, as if it was not of the soil and of flesh and bone and of historical fact. And it's in the bones of our country.
Yeah.
And so we have yet to experience a true reckoning.
Yeah. That's true.
And we live in an incredible time of, we have our generation of leaders and of leaders leading toward racial equity and equality and the eradication of white supremacy. And it's a wonder to watch. Uh-huh. You know, every generation has them. Of course, we'll think of them kinder in hindsight, probably, like we always do.
They'll be saints then.
Oh
yeah. Oh yeah.
I find myself, just almost stubbornly, in a way that's frustrating, clinging to hope. I'm dating a person, Bishop. I'm 48 years old, and I'm dating someone. What in the world?
Oh, how cool.
And he's black.
Really?
He's black. And he works, his primary work is in sort of racial justice. That's where he concentrates his leadership. He and I were on a trip not too long ago, and another story spiked, you know, in the news, and we were having breakfast. We were in New York, and I just, it was just another senseless shooting of an innocent person and an innocent black man. Yeah. And we just sat there over breakfast. I couldn't finish my food. And I just said, it just won't end. We can't get to the bottom of it. There's no bottom. And then we're going to be gaslit that it wasn't what it was. And we didn't see what we saw, and we didn't hear what we hear. And then the system is set up to to defend these, you know, I'm just going on and on and on.
Yeah.
To my Black boyfriend, who has lived as a Black man his whole life. And he just says to me, just kind of lets me rant for a little bit and goes, you know, I'm hopeful. And I was like, how dare you? Like, why are you saying that? What reason could you possibly have to be hopeful? Like, that's just foolishness at this point. I was in a real mood. And he said, you know, he said, I am 6'2", big Black guy with dreadlocks. I'm in New York City at this nice restaurant having brunch with my white girlfriend. And we have had the best couple of days. We've walked around the city. We've been loved and welcomed everywhere we went with delight. He was like, I am my ancestors' dreams. He's right. Like, not 75 years ago, nobody would have believed this, that this was possible, that this was the way. And he just said, things do change. They do. When it's in your time, it's so slow. When it's your generation, it's just such slow. The wheels of justice just grind. But they do grind. And they do change.
They do turn.
And so I just keep thinking, this is our moment. This is ours. We've been handed this little stretch of time. It's all we have. And it's our work to do while we're here. And so we have to do it with hope. We have to do it with integrity. We have to do it with commitment and dedication, just like every generation before us. And so, so to that degree, I have been forced into hope because things do change. And hopefully we're going to hand this world to our kids' generation just a little bit better. We got it. And they'll do the same. And that's how it goes. The arc of justice.
Maya Angelou used to say, remember, you are the hope and the dream of the slave. And that's, God, that's true. Without, I remember in, I hadn't been to the, to Montgomery since before, since after the pandemic. Last time I was there was before. And I didn't remember the poem at the Memorial Gardens, but at the end of the poem, and I'm paraphrasing, it's said better than this, but there's this line that hope is the energy that gives passion for justice. Hope is the energy that gives passion for justice.
It's worth protecting. It is. It's worth protecting. It's worth nurturing. It's worth hanging on to, even when it seems like hubris to do so. When so much evidence to the contrary is happy to present itself every single day that we're not there, because we aren't. We're not there. I love that quote. And I hope to always be that kind of leader who never lets that extinguish. And so that all I'm running on is fury. And we know those leaders too. You know, because that's also fuel. Anger is fuel, and it can get you down the road. But I don't know how long it'll work. I don't know. I don't know how quickly it'll burn that'll burn out, and to what end. And so I hope to continue to put enough hope in the gas tank as the fuel, and then we'll let anger mix in there too, because we need a little of that as well, a little righteous anger. But it does need to be partnered with hope and with love and all the things that have ever really changed the world. So those are the same old tools. There's nothing new under the sun. It's the same old stuff that's always worked.
Oh, nothing new. Have you had moments in your life, as Jen puts it, when you felt forced into hope because maybe things do change? Well, the other thing that happened while we were, I mean, I don't know, I'm bringing the House of Bishops in, but I'm just coming back from that. But while we were there, we reaffirmed a resolution. It was really kind of a statement of support for the trans community, for our trans siblings, and for children and young people, as well as adults. But because they are being used, weaponized and used for political purposes.
which in and of itself, to do that to any human being is evil. That is evil. I'm not talking about the people being evil. I'm talking about that is evil behavior. And it is. And it's happening. And I know you're in Texas. And I don't want to get you in trouble in Texas.
Bishop, I'm as in trouble as I could ever be. You can't get me out of trouble. So
I know you are.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get you in more. But where are the voices of hope?
First of all, I saw that statement and I was just moved. I was moved by it. It matters when voices of spiritual authority speak up and stand up. It matters. It just does. And the Episcopal Church has been a leader in justice forever. And so I thank you, first of all, for reaffirming what has always been true for your church. I mean, that's not new. You're not new to loving our trans siblings, but the reaffirmation of it right now, particularly at this moment, matters. And people listen to that. Everything matters. Every single statement of kindness, every bit of support, every time we vote on behalf of our neighbors, all of it matters. It does. People are watching. And so some of it we see immediately because we see the very end of someone's journey. We see them say, okay, you're right. Let me turn with love toward this community. Or we see a church in its entirety say, the doors are open. Like, you are welcome here in every strata of leadership. You know, we see these amazing, this amazing fruit ultimately, but there are so many folks and churches and denominations and spiritual leaders who are watching quietly, and they're somewhere here. They're not down here, but they're listening, and it matters. Right. When I look at my own journey toward becoming an ally, ultimately, like reexamining what it was I was taught as a kid, holding it up to the light of truth and deciding if it was eternal or if that was more like just systemic. It took me a minute, and I had a lot of teachers on the road that I was just like looking like this. They didn't know I was there.
That's true.
But I was listening. I was like,
listening.
I was learning. Yep. I was absorbing. I was internally processing. And so when the Episcopal Church comes out and says, yet again, here we affirm our siblings and we are for their care and safety, and they are welcome in our churches and in our neighborhoods and in our homes and in our families, it matters. I would love for this to be obsolete one day.
I know.
That the church does not have to put out a statement that we are here as allies to our trans siblings, that would just be a given. Just an absolute given.
Exactly. And that, you know, and to keep, I don't remember where I was, but this was with leaders of the Jewish community this wasn't right after the Tree of Life in Pittsburgh, but that was in the atmosphere. And one of the leaders said, because members of the Muslim community had come out in support, opposition to what had happened. And it wasn't Tree of Life. This was after Tree of Life. And one of the Jewish leaders said, you have no idea the power and the impact of hope when Muslim and Christians stand with Jews or anybody else. It's because we're pitted against each other. To come together to support each other. He said, that's a powerful witness. And he said, what you just said, he said, who knows, but that you'll call out more friends who will find their way to be supportive as opposed to more people to be negative. It's true. We can affect each other for the good. We can't do everything. I used to tell my congregation, we can't do everything, but you can do something.
That's right. That's right. Each one of us has a couple of lanterns to hold up. That's it. Just hold them up. Hold them up with like diligence and commitment. Those are yours. And if we all do it, the whole path will be lit. So I also feel hopeful. Sometimes I don't even want to, but I do. I just keep thinking, okay, I just believe that in the end, what we read is true, that love is greater. It's the greater power and it has the lasting power and it'll have the last say. And so that's the side to be on. However murky it feels here in the messy middle, however it seems like we're living in the upside down sometimes, I just believe love's going to have the last word. And so that's our team. We're team that. Yeah. I always ask myself, my sort of through line when I'm trying to discern what to do or what to believe or how to lead or what to let go of, what to just walk away from and what to engage. I always think about myself as a 95-year-old. And I think, okay, when I just can't get clarity any other way, I've got two like through lines. One of them is the fruit of the tree. So Jesus's parable is my absolute gold standard for deciding if something is godly or not. What's the fruit? Look to the fruit. That'll tell you the truth. But the other one is my 95-year-old self. And I always think, my 95-year-old self. And I think about her, when I'm old. And I'm like,
oh, okay, yeah.
What will I be proud of? What will 95-year-old me look back on and say, you did the right thing. That was the good thing. That was the holy thing. That was the loving thing. That was the brave thing. She's discerning. Because she's not gonna look back and wish I got sunk by the Malay. She's gonna say, did you do the things that mattered? And so I think about her a lot and it helps me go, oh yeah, this is worth the work. Or, Jen, walk away from this one. Walk away. This'll disappear through your fingers a week from now. Like, this one's not worth it. And so between the fruit and my old lady self, that's pretty much how I figure out how to operate in the world.
I love it. Oh, I was going to ask you, what words would you share with us that we can take away from this podcast? And you just gave them.
I think I just did.
You just gave them.
The fruit, old age. Here, use that. That's how you figure out how to live.
With those words, all I can say is thank you and thank God for you. And thank you, Jesus. Thank you, God. Jen Hatmaker, you are God's beloved, and you have just blessed us. God bless you, my friend.
I just love you dearly and have learned so much from you, and you're a mentor to me. And I am so grateful for your faithful witness on this earth. So anytime you need to fill an hour for your podcast, you call me.
I love it. I sure will. And you just gave me a blessing. See, now I'm just going to look ahead instead of just looking back. Look ahead.
That's right.
Because I got about 20 more years before I'm 90. So I'm just going to look ahead to being 90.
Yeah, you're still a young man. You got plenty of pavement in front of you. That's right. Let's see what your old self wants to say about it.
Oh, Jen, God love you. You are incredible. And may God bless you and all you do.
Thank you.
Because you have surely been a blessing to us and to me. Take care, my friend.
Thank you. You too.
Learn more about the way of love and creating your own rule of life based on the practices of turn, learn, pray, worship, bless, go, and rest. Check out Jen Hatmaker's book, Feed These People, online or at your favorite independent bookstore, and visit Jen online at jenhatmaker.com. That's jenhatmaker.com. The Way of Love podcast executive producer is Jeremy Tackett. Our podcast engineer is Ellie Singer. Research and guest relations are managed by Amanda Skofsted. And our project manager is Chris Sikkema. I'm Michael Curry, and I'll see you next time on The Way of Love. God love you.